Good morning. My name is Leslie Keller, and I will be your conference operator for today. Participation in this conference call is strictly limited to invited participants. This call is exclusively for financial analysts and investors. If you are not an invited guest, please disconnect at this time. At this time, I would like to welcome you to the conference call on General Economic Policy Guidelines 2021. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a questions and answers session. If you would like to make a question during this time, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 8 again. I will now introduce you to the speakers. Iván Cajeme Villarreal Camero, Chief Economist of the Ministry of Finance and Public Credit. José de Luna Martínez, Head of the Public Debt Unit of the Ministry of Finance and Public Credit. And Francisco Javier Arias Vázquez, Head of the Unit for Tax Revenues of the Ministry of Finance and Public Credit, to proceed with the remarks. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. I hope you're all doing well through this difficult time, and I thank you for joining us here today to talk about the economic package for 2021 that we just presented a couple of days ago. Here with me are also Karina Ramirez, who is the head of the non-tax revenue, and some other colleagues from the planning unit ready to answer your questions. We want to talk to you first a little bit about where the budget comes from, how you, the process, how we prepare it, the process we followed. So we explain some things along the way. So as you know, the end of 2019, the end of 2019, we were observing a synchronized slowdown, which had been underway for the whole year, most of the year, because of the well, first the end of a long, pretty long, the longest in the U.S. Economic boom. A cycle, the uncertainty also generated by the trade tensions between the U.S. and China, and some other geopolitical tensions such as the Brexit negotiation. At the beginning of 2020, things seemed to be a bit more clearer, better. Prospects were good. The phase one trade deal reached by U.S. and China was helping in the sentiment. For us here in Mexico in particular, the ratification of the USMCA was underway. We were also seeing a slightly higher average oil, price for the oil than the one that we used for the estimations of $49 per barrel, which was good. And so the IMF in January, in its World Economic Outlook for January, was forecasting that over 160 countries were going to have an increase in GDP per capita this year. Then the COVID-19 came and it changed everything. It created the first contraction, the first crisis, economic crisis by design in history. As you know very well, it is a crisis. It is not the result of economic macroeconomic imbalances. It is not the result of the accumulation of debt. It is not the result of problems with current accounts. It is the result of the decision by government and by societies to shut down parts of the economy, to lock themselves down, because of restrictions by the government. It is the result of restrictions to mobility, which is causing this contraction. And that creates many challenges, both for the contraction itself and also for the recovery. Here in Mexico, we were hit by these decisions made by other countries even before we imposed our own restrictions to mobility and our own lockdowns. The shutdown or the partial shutdown of industrial sectors, for example, affected us because our economy is pretty integrated to the global supply chains. So that hit us. And then restrictions to mobility, in other countries, such as in particular the U.S., hit some of the states that are very dependent on tourism, such as Quintana Roo, Nayarit, Guerrero, Baja California Sur, Sinaloa as well. These are sectors, well, states that are a little diversified. They're kind of sort of a little diversified, so they were hit particularly by the pandemic. And if you see that reflects on the employment in those states, those are the ones that, in relative terms, have been the worst hit. So that, together with all the turmoil in the financial markets, the global financial markets, such as the increase in the exchange rate that came with the uncertainty, created some panic and risk, an increase in risk aversion in investors who flew to higher quality assets. It caused an increase in exchange rate, caused an increase in risk premium, and affected our finances in several ways. The uncertainty about what was going to happen to global demand affected particularly the oil sector, and that was exacerbated by the disagreements and tensions between the members of OPEC Plus in March, which went all through April. And so with our revenues depending on between 15-17% on oil revenues, that hit us as well. So we were facing right at the beginning of the year, in the first quarter of the year, we were already facing several challenges, an increase in health, potential increase in health to face the sanitary emergency, more resources that were going to need to be devoted to families and to firms in order to prevent liquidity problems. Lower tax and non-tax revenues because of the depressed economic activity, lower revenues because of what I was saying, and also an increase in debt due to the higher exchange rate. All countries around the world put in place packages, both fiscal and monetary, as never been seen before, that have helped ease conditions, particularly in the global financial markets. But in all these countries, in all this context, we here in Mexico had to make several decisions. Several decisions regarding health and regarding the economy. Little was known. It is still little known about the virus, exactly how it is, how it is transmitted, how lethal it is. We have been learning along the way, and that. Process, that learning process is what has caused, for example, the change in the expectations about the duration of the pandemic. At the beginning, we thought it was going to be a matter of maybe a month, 6 weeks, and then it was going to be over, as some episodes that we've had in the past. It hasn't been the case. It has extended. We know now it's going to take a while before we can control it. It's only going until we have a vaccine that allows for a wide reopening that we're going to be able, that it's going to be actually controlled. And but that won't be that's not going to happen for a while, maybe half a year including. So that was one of the contexts. We also knew that we had to put in place, it was important to put in place some counter-cyclical measures. The 2009 crisis showed us that. And it also showed us that it was important that these measures were put in place quickly, pretty fast. We couldn't waste time designing new infrastructure projects to spend the money on these countercyclical measures. It had to be done quickly. So within this context, we made some decisions around five issues. In the health sector, we devoted resources and also made arrangements with the private sector to build up capacity, to make sure that there was always available capacity to take care of those who fell ill. The health system coordinated with the private sector, so the private sector would take care of some of the people who are facing other diseases, some other illnesses. So the public system could take care of people sick with COVID-19. more resources we put in place by the Ministry of Defense and by the Navy also to help face the health emergency. The Ministry of Health with INSABI also spent 3 billion pesos, 4 billion pesos to buy more materials, medicines, equipment, etc. Also, the hiring of close to 45,000 new healthcare workers was important in this effort of building capacity. Then there was also the lockdown measures themselves, which are very important. And I mean lockdown in an ample way. I mean, first, the stricter lockdown that took place in the months of April and May, when it was most important to contain the spread of the virus in order to let the health system build capacity to provide care for people. And then also the orderly and gradual and safe reopening that started in June. I mean, that's a mitigated lockdown, let's say. Taking into account the trajectory of the pandemic during Mexico, the health ministry has been indicating which sectors can open, when, in which states, what capacity can be used, for example, at restaurants or at other places, always taking into account how the disease is evolving here in Mexico. And that's part of the process also that's taking place everywhere in the world with the change in the expectations for the duration of the disease, as I was saying. Third measure that we took was we decided to use the infrastructure for the deployment of social programs that was already in place. As I was saying, we had learned from the crisis in 2009 that it was important to do to deploy expenditures fast, and so the fastest way was to use what we already had, all the disbursement infrastructure that we had already in place. So we did many things in those ways. We pushed forward some transfers for people, especially the vulnerable sectors, the elderly people, and the discapacitated. These transfers not only helped them, but also helped their families, of course. So that was a way to help these families to maintain consumption levels. Help also with the big increase in remittances that we have seen, 10% between January and July, something that we haven't seen in some other places that are rely importantly on remittances as well, such as Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, etc. Here, it has been fortunately the case that remittances have increased a lot, and that's helped also maintain consumption. We also decided to continue keep spending on the infrastructure projects, big infrastructure projects that were already underway. They have a capacity to absorb all these resources. Some other projects didn't have it. Some other projects will be completely new, so they will be designed from scratch, and that was just going to be a waste of time. So it was better to just continue spending on the already ongoing infrastructure projects, such as the Dos Bocas refinery, such as the Felipe Ángeles Airport, the Interoceanic Corridor, etc. The fourth thing we did was to help families and firms with liquidity issues. And we have done this in several ways. One is the transfers, for example, the credits for micro firms. The ones that have the least access to formal credit channels, and that was one way. I think 1.6 million firms have been helped this way already. But then we did many other things that did not require the spending of public resources, because, as you know, as I was saying at the beginning, we were already facing a reality that debt was going to increase because of the increase in exchange rate. So, for example, just a simple regulatory measure such as issuing the special accounting standard by the National Commission of Securities, the CNBV, has helped above 7.6 million credits being restructured for a total amount of 1.4 trillion pesos. Which has been very helpful for all these families, for firms. They don't have to spent now in paying interest or capital, they can do it till the end of the credit without hurting their credits and without hurting the bank themselves. And also, together with the Banco de Mexico, we put in place in, through the Exchange Commission some credits to help with external liquidity issues. In the local bond market, the authorities did some liability management operations that help liquidity for local investors. Then many other institutions have helped also putting forbearance programs in place, such as Infonavit, Foviste, Infonacot, and other forbearance programs, and also credit programs to help people through these times. Regarding public finances, we decided it was best to keep our public finances healthy. We didn't know how long this was going to take. It's taking longer than we thought at the beginning, and so that's why this was important. So we have been fighting evasion with the tools that the Congress gave us last year when the economic package for 2020 was approved. And some other changes also that were made since 2019, for example, such as the elimination of the universal compensation, some other changes in fiscal expenses that have been helping to have the relative to the context, relatively good results in terms of tax revenues. I'm going to talk a little more in a few minutes. Also, we decided to redistribute some of the non-priority spending, for example, in operating costs, in materials, in office supplies, etc., towards priority spending in health, in infrastructure, in social programs. That's what helps explain the increase in social development spending, in economic development spending that we have seen between January and July. And of course, this administration has placed a pretty high priority to the control of debt. Our commitment is the commitment that President López Obrador made was that debt should not increase, the debt to GDP ratio should not increase during this administration, and we have been working very hard towards that goal. So that's also one of the reasons why we decided to wait to keep our public finances healthy. We have done instead working with liability management operations in order to help have a robust portfolio. And we have done also other things to promote spending. Not everything has to be through the public budget. So, for example, we have been working very closely with the Ministry of Communication, Transportation, and some other ministries in order to promote private investment. And we now have a portfolio of 59 projects in roads, in water, sanitation, environment, and this project amount for 300 billion pesos. So, what have we seen with all these things that we have been doing? What we have seen is first of all, the build-up of capacity in the health system has been helpful, of course. We have never had an occupation of beds for COVID, general beds, and also those for special with ventilators above 50% in general. And actually, with the recent decline, it's still early to see a permanent trend, of course, but we have seen for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, a decline from the peak that we reached in between July 26th and August 1st in COVID cases. There's been a decline of around 25%, and that's helped to have an even lower occupation of beds. It's around 30% levels now, which helps to contain the disease and to help for an orderly reopening. As for the economy, as you know very well, we have seen a rebound starting in June in the economy. Just in general, the global index of economic activity increased in June with respect to May, 8.9%. And there are many other variables that show a recovery in the economy that has come along with the orderly reopening. So, for example, INEGI has reported that between May and July, 6.6 million jobs in the informal sector have been recovered out of the 10.4 million that were lost in April with the lockdown. The informal sector is, of course, more flexible, and it was hit the hardest by the lockdown. It represented 83% of the 12.5 million jobs that were lost in April. So that we were seeing a faster recovery there, and a very important one for the economy. As for formal jobs, according to INEGI, we have seen also a recovery in the months of June and July of 1.4 million jobs compared to the 4 million lost in April and May. The informal sector also saw a loss in May as opposed to the informal one, but it's recovering. We saw a drop in July, a slight one. We think it's going to keep recovering in the following months. The INS is also showing with the more high frequency data, we are seeing 166 jobs recovered in the construction sector and around 100 jobs, I think, recovered in the manufacturing sector. We're also seeing with the high frequency data recovering in debit card spending, credit card spending of 100% of the loss that was experienced between end of February and mid-April. Exports have increased a lot, helped by the recovery, the synchronized reopening with our main trading partners, especially the U.S. Manufacturing production has also showed an increase. It was 26.7% in June as compared to May. And industrial activity just in general in June increased almost 18%. So those are more or less the signs we are seeing. We are also seeing the same taking place elsewhere in the world and in the U.S. So I was saying retail sales have been increasing, industrial production has been increasing, which is very correlated with our economy. PMIs are in expansion zone for a couple of months now. The PMI in Mexico reported by INEGI just recently also got to expansion zone. And we are seeing also similar data in Europe and in China. So what are we seeing for the close of 2020 in terms of the finances? As you already saw in the general guidelines, we are adjusting upwards our estimates for balances and for revenues. The primary balance has increased from the minus 0.6% of GDP that we showed in our second quarterly report to 0.2% of GDP. The budget balance is increasing from minus 3.7% of GDP to minus 2.9% of GDP. That's what we expect to close. And the public sector borrowing requirements are improving from minus 5.4% of GDP to minus 4.7% of GDP, which leads to a decline in our expectation for the historical balance of the public sector borrowing requirements from the 55.4% that we reported in our second quarter to 54.7%. And most of this comes from an increase in our expectations for tax revenues from the ones that we were estimating for the second quarter. We thought back then that we were going to see by the end of the year a gap in tax revenues of a little above 400 billion pesos, 402.5 billion pesos. But with data from, we were waiting for data from July and from August to update our estimates. And we are what we are seeing definitely allows us to move upward our estimates as we showed in general guidelines. If you can see this, it's actually very straightforward. You can check with what we have published. Up until June, the gap in tax revenues compared to the ONCE program was around 67 billion pesos. Then in July, the gap was around 37.5 billion pesos, just July. If we saw the same collection, same gap through the rest of the year, which is pretty pessimistic, because you will assume that same economic activity that we saw in June, because that's the one, the collection that July reflects the economic activity of June. So if we assume that the same collection stayed for the rest of the year until December, then the gap at the end of the year will be of around 290 billion pesos. So we think the gap of 274 billion pesos that we are estimating is a feasible one. It's actually pretty comfortable one, and we're actually going to see an improvement in the August figures probably that we're going to release in the coming days. And so that explains the update. And what else can I tell you about 2020? I think, and that leads us then to the 2021 estimates. What are we expecting for 2021? Well, first of all, we know that the trajectory of the pandemic will continue to set the pace of the reopening. Of course, it will continue outlining the execution of economic policy, as it's been the case so far. The economy, we think, is going to continue gradually reopening here in Mexico and also in other places in the world. They're going to continue reopening slowly, gradually, orderly. And then also, we are the entry into force of USMCA last July 1st is going to help. It has reduced a lot of the uncertainty that surrounded the relationship with our main trading partner, and it's going to help them boost investment here in Mexico, and all of that, and just even a lot of it also, what we are expecting for 2021 is a rebound in the economy, such as the one that we already saw in the figures for June. Just because of the gradual reopening is going to mean a rebound in the economy. For the second part of the 2020 and also for 2021. And so that's what's leading us to our estimate of a growth, the one we used in our estimate and our projections for the public finances, of a 4.6 growth of GDP in 2021. It is not particularly optimistic. There are estimates out there that are even higher, and we think it is the range that we are considering, between 3.6 and 5.6, is feasible. We're also using an oil price of $42.1 per barrel, which is in line with what we have seen in recent months, especially July, August, beginning of September. Right now, it's a little lower because of a policy by Saudi Aramco, but we think that as long as the supply keeps recovering in line with demand, inventories are gradually eliminated, we're going to see a gradual, though not as fast as we will want, but still a recovery in oil prices through the rest of 2020 and beginning of 2021. We are estimating a production, an oil production of 1.857 million barrels of oil per day. It has two parts. 61,000 barrels per day are from the coming from the private production, and 1.796 million barrels per day will come from Pemex. As you know very well, I'm pretty sure you've been following statistics reported by CNH. Their production has been increasing in line with the commitments that they made, the private producers, I mean, in their development plans and producing plans. It was Well, it was here in the beginning, of course. Then it has been increasing slowly but surely, and it's taking increasing more rapidly. It was around 15,000 barrels per day, on average last year, I think. This year it's been 35,000 per day, 35,000 barrels per day, the average between January and July. And so in line with the estimates from CNH and from SENER, we are using this 61,000 barrels per day next year. And for Pemex, we're also thinking the 1.796 million barrels per day is feasible. It represents an increase of 5% from the 1.71 million barrels per day that we're estimating as average for this year for Pemex. It is 5% increase. It is feasible. The contraction that we saw in May and June responds to the agreement with the OPEC Plus. There have been some issues. There were some issues in July, but the Pemex is reporting some storms in the Gulf of Mexico. As you know, it's storm season now, hurricane season actually, and that's why we saw that decrease. But Pemex is working towards fulfilling the objective of 1.71 million barrels per day, and it's pretty feasible. And in August, they're going to show an improvement in their production. We're also using consistent with Banco de Mexico's target, an inflation of 3%. We're also using an interest rate of 4%, which assumes there's going to be, in line with the expectations of analysts, there's going to be a further reduction this year. And we're using an average exchange rate of 22.1 pesos per dollar for next year, which is it's going to start the year in 22.3, which is what we expect the dollar to the exchange rate to end at this year, in line with what we have seen recently, and we expect the exchange rate to go further down next year, in line with the economic recovery, to 21.9 pesos per dollar at the end of 2021. So about the public finances. The revenue law initiative does not contemplate the creation of new taxes, nor the increasing existing tax rates. We don't think it's, of course, in a recovery scenario, it's not the best thing to do to impose new taxes. We are instead continuing what we have done these years, these couple of years, fighting evasion, reducing the room for tax evasion, reducing the room for tax fraud, which is what has helped us a lot in these difficult times without imposing any new contributions to people or to firms. As you, I've said it before, the figure is always important. There is an estimate of 2.5% of GDP of tax evasion just in VAT revenues for Mexico, and an estimate of close to 1% of GDP for income tax that's evaded. So there's a lot of room there for increased revenues without imposing any new taxes. For 2021, we're estimating a budgetary revenues of 5.5 trillion pesos. The figure is 3.0 lower in real terms than the one approved in 2020, but higher by 6.5% than the one we estimated for 2020 if we exclude in both years the non-recurring non-tax revenues, such as trust, the ones coming from trust funds. This year also we're going to see there from the stabilization fund and some others. So if we exclude that, the increase is going to be 6.5% in real terms. The tax revenue is increasing 5.7% in real terms with respect to the ones estimated in 2020. If you exclude the revenues coming from the excise tax on fuels, the increase is 4.6% in line with the real growth that we're estimating. We think, of course, since mobility and hence consumption of gasolines was particularly hit during the pandemic. It's also the one that we're going to see some recovery, important recovery next year when, with the gradual reopening of the economy. Non-tax revenues increased 19.3% in real terms compared to 2020 approved, which is explained by the use next year of 33 billion pesos from the health trust, which will help to face the contingency associated to COVID-19. Finally, oil revenues represent 17% of total budget revenues next year. We are expecting an increase of 13% in real terms to the estimate in 2020. And most of the increase, we're going to see it in the revenues for the federal government itself, and it's because several things. The decrease we are seeing the increase we're going to see next year in oil prices and production, but also this year we gave Pemex a fiscal benefit for 65 billion pesos, which is not included in next year's estimates. Importantly, as you know, next year the royalty that Pemex pays is going to go further down from 58% this year, which was reduced from 65% that was last year. So it reduced 55% this year, and it's going to go further down to 54% next year. On expenditures, the 2021 budget amounts to 6.3 trillion pesos. Of this, 73.2 is programmable expenditure, and the rest is non-programmable expenditure. Programmable expenditure increases 1.3% in comparison to the one approved in 2020. There is an important increase in health, in the health sector, of 9.1% in real terms to continue the efforts, to attend the health emergency. And also, there is an increase, together, IMSS and ISSSTE have an increase in the budget of 5%. Investment spending is 5.3% higher in real terms than 2021, and also in physical investment is even higher, 8% in real terms, if I remember correctly, compared to 2020. There's a total of close to 1.9 trillion pesos to support the actions of states and municipalities. All of their expenditures. This is taking into account participations and the general branches of spending. Spending in administrative branches will increase by 4.8% compared to the approved budget of 2020. We're seeing some contractions in some of the branches, but they're the ones that do not have to face increased spending because of the pandemic, such as health, as I was mentioning, et cetera. So, for example, the ones where we've seen the decrease, particular decrease, are the Office of the Presidency, Hacienda itself, Foreign Relations, et cetera. We're going to see a increased spending in defense, the Guardia Nacional, to improve security issues, health, urban development, and welfare ministries, of course. Some relevant branches and the ones that are the biggest in the budget, like the Ministries of Education, Economy, Environment, Security, Science and Technology, will have marginal real increments that will keep them with a similar budget compared to the 2020. Non-programmable expenditure is decreasing. Is decreasing compared to 2020. Part of it is because of the decrease in financial cost, which is important. It comes from the reduction in interest rates, of course, and because of the liability management operations that have taken place during the year. So they are decreasing 2.5% of financial costs compared to the estimate for 2020, and by 3.8% compared to the figure approved for this year. Finally, on balances, the improvement in revenues is going to help us decrease the public sector borrowing requirements from -4.7% of GDP to 3.4% of GDP. And this will allow the reduction of the historical balance from 54.7% of GDP that we estimate at the end of this year to 53.7%. And we're planning to put it in a decreasing path. We presented some preliminary figures in the general guidelines, where it decreases around 0.3% of GDP every year, but this could go further up with improvements in revenues, maybe a process of fiscal consolidation, which all of which will become clearer once we have, as the world, I mean, as a whole, once we have controlled the COVID-19 pandemic and stimuli are no longer needed. The public balance, we're keeping it in relation to GDP the same as the estimate for the end of 2020, 2.9% of GDP. We're asking Congress for an extra, that, I mean, that 2.9% of GDP includes 0.7% of GDP that we are asking Congress as a deviation from the equilibrium in order to support the expenditures needed during to face the health and economic emergency. We think let me just end now to give space for questions. We think this estimates we're presenting and the macroeconomic framework that we are presenting are very reasonable, and they're going to leave us in a position, a sound position, the public finances a sound position for sustained support to the health sector and to the economy for the upcoming months and also for 2021. They're going to leave us also in a strong position for potential new turmoil in the financial sector caused by the fact that we still don't know how the pandemic is going to progress. I think I'm going to end now here, and we are ready to take your questions. Thank you very much.